very much this evening. Well, Pastor Lopez, why don't you come up here? Why don't you come up here for a minute? Pastor Lopez, of course, kind of sneaks into town. He doesn't exactly let you know when he's coming, and he doesn't exactly let you know what he's doing, and that's so that he can avoid some of you. And so, no, just kidding. Wow. Wow, do you hear that? That does not bode well, Pastor Lopez. It doesn't bode well at all. But he has graciously consented to speak to us tonight. I know a number of you had asked about that. And he doesn't bring the proper attire on vacation simply so that he won't be asked. But he very graciously has agreed to speak tonight. So, Pastor Lopez, why don't you come and preach for us? He was our assistant pastor for 15 years. You come. No. Okay, the fact that he doesn't wear a coat, that was ridiculous. We're not going liberal. So, go ahead.
I can use it as a bathrobe, if nothing else. I can.
That's wrong.
It's good to see you tonight, and Pastor Monty asked me this afternoon, him and I were able to enjoy some time together, and he asked if I'd consider it, and I said, well, sure. All children going to like that. You know how I'm in church, my attire and. And I usually, when in our church, I tell people, you know, I just want you in church. You know, don't stress about what to wear. But for some reason, when you're the one who's doing it, it feels a little bit more awkward. And so he has taken a very bold move as an independent Baptist in allowing someone like this to be able to preach tonight. So thank you, Pastor Monty. I will say probably most pastors, even independent Baptists, dress like this in Arizona when they preach. It's not something I do, but it is something that is very common in the state of Arizona. So if I'm in Arizona, this fits in. Arizona is a completely different culture. Several of you have asked, like, hey, how's the church going? What's it like? It's such a different culture. I don't know if I could have fully prepared for it or understood it as I was about to go into it. I could not have developed a game plan of that culture because I had no idea. I don't know if anybody's ever spent a lot of time in Arizona. Has anybody ever spent any time at all in the state of Arizona? So quite a few of you. It's amazing. I mean, I'll say that. I'll be honest. It's an amazing place. And we have taken time to learn the people, to learn the culture, to learn the ways, and to be able to familiarize ourselves with how people think. And we went out there really wanting to go to an area where there's not, so to speak, a church on every corner. We wanted to go somewhere. People are very sensitive. We've been able in our ministry to see such a diversity of background of people who are coming to the church and coming to faith in Christ. It's honestly surprised me. We are getting an influx of people in Phoenix from California. Just taxes and all the craziness of California life are causing people to leave California. I think maybe like the 2008 crash caused Michigan people to leave. That's kind of what's going on a little bit in California. So we're getting an influx of people from that state in Phoenix. And they come with a completely different mindset when they come to Phoenix. But it's interesting because we have been able to see so many people come to Christ. We've seen people who are Mormons come to Christ. People who, I don't know how much you've interacted with Mormons, and I hadn't interacted with them as much till we arrived there. The people who, when I start talking about Christ and the gospel, they would look at you and say, oh, we believe the exact same things. And I started really thinking, okay, I've got to get deeper into this to realize that. Now, over time, we've been able to see Mormons that have come to Christ. We've seen some Catholics who were kind of trusting in religion and works that have come to Christ. We've seen completely unchurched people who have come to Christ. We have seen people who have come from Christian churches, general Christian churches, who are coming to our church. We are not contemporary in our worship services, so we are very different from what the Christian church would be, but they've been coming. There seems to be a hunger for the Bible. I think that's the only way that I can say it. In the Phoenix area, there is a serious hunger for the Word of God. So in our ministry, we have just focused on the Word of God, the Scriptures. I mean, literally, we have just focused on it. What we have seen is that when we have been able to start doing so, it has caused just a as a person. The thing that's changed most about our ministry since the time that I arrived there, it's probably me. It's the growth that God has done in my heart. It's the changing that God has done in my thinking. I'm talking to the most basic aspect of my existence, like where do I find my identity for who I am? It's changed. What is my entire purpose for living and existing? It's changed. What do I foresee, or how do I view my relationship with the church and my responsibilities as a pastor? It's even adjusted and grown as well. It's been interesting because sometimes the change has made me quite uncomfortable. I've had to really get alone and say, God, is that really what you have for me? And have I really been living in a way or thinking in a way that is not biblically accurate? God has done some pretty amazing, outstanding things in my life, and I will tell you, it's been in a surprising way. It was probably, I think it was my first Easter service in Phoenix. I was so pumped because we were going to have a big Sunday, I thought. You know, you always think you're going to have a big Sunday on Easter. I was so excited. I went to bed that night, couldn't hardly get to sleep. I just couldn't wait for the next day, my first Easter as the pastor of the church. And so that next morning, I get up and I get in my Bible and I start reading it. And I'm thinking it's going to be like the Lord, like giving me a pep talk and like cheering me on and like, go get it, Peter, you know, and just it's going to be me and the Lord sending me out into the field to play a good game. And I got alone with the Lord that morning. I'm reading my Bible. And as I'm reading the scriptures and preparing, the scriptures that I read that morning were so specific and deliberately placed in that passage by God for me at that very moment, where I felt like the Lord was like, before you really go through what you're about to do and engage in the spiritual warfare you're about to engage in, you need to realize something about your own self. And I'll never forget, I was stunned. You know, it's like somebody does something that surprises you, you're just taken back. That's how I felt. I was stunned that, Lord, I thought you were going to give me a pep talk. But that's what the Lord has done in me and to me. A part of it, honestly, is exciting for me, but sad. Because we ministered here for 15 years at Faith Baptist. And served, you know, just as much as we could for Pastor Monty and for the people of the congregation. You know what we poured into the ministry. And I wish, and I know the Lord has a perfect plan, but I wish that I was then who I am now, because I would have been better for you, and I would have been more helpful to you, and I would have helped you probably even more grow through what you would have seen in me as being more authentic and genuine in my growth. And so I'm sorry to those of you who I ministered for any lack of productivity and help that I could have produced in your life. I'm thankful for what the Lord has done to my life, and honestly, now my approach is so completely focused because of how I feel the Lord has grown me and how it relates to my present and past ministries. Tonight's message is really birthed from some of the most intense growth that I have had to experience as a person. So it's simple. It's not going to be like, oh, I've never heard that before, but it's very personal to me. And it shapes your thinking in more ways than I can ever tell you in one message. But my hope is that tonight, maybe through the text, through what you see the Lord is trying to say, maybe even through the way you see me communicate it tonight, that you could see that tonight is very personal. And that tonight is the kind of thing that may not be the end of what God wants to do in your life, but that it would at least be the beginning. Or maybe the Lord wants to stir you up and challenge your thinking. And if he does, I'm asking you to just embrace it. Just take it for what it is. Say, okay, Lord, I'll start down that. I'll start down. I'm going to ask you to go to the text with me that we're going to look at. It's the Gospel of Luke, chapter number 14. The Gospel of Luke in chapter number 14. We're going to look at verse number 25. The Gospel of Luke, chapter number 14, verse number 25. We're only going to be looking at probably about maybe 7 or 8 verses, and about 3 of them in pretty good detail. The rest of them, we're just going to kind of take the overall view of what God is saying. In this passage, Jesus is speaking. Just to create a visual image in your mind, Jesus has done some amazing things already in his ministry. So people are following him. I mean, they're following him. For a lot of different reasons, we're going to see, but he has a mass of people who are following him. So here in this text, the image I get in my mind is that Jesus is walking along the countryside, and as he's walking along the countryside, he knows that there's a lot of followers behind him, a lot of people saying, I'm following him. Or maybe to even use it the way we say it now, a lot of people saying, I'm a Christian. So there's a lot of that going on. I don't know how many. It says great multitude. That's potentially in the hundreds upon hundreds of people. But Jesus knows that it's not just that easy where you just say, okay, I'm going to do it, and then you just go through the motions. He knows that if you're really going to be a follower of Jesus Christ, you need to know ahead of time what it's going to take. Because to follow him is so opposite of what normal religion teaches. Normal religion tries to make Christianity a set of do's or a set of don'ts. Or it tries to guilt, or it tries to obligate. It tries to pressure you. It gives you an overall sense that you're never just going to be able to do what you really need to do. Jesus, in that time, dealing with all these people, knows all these things. So I get the picture that finally he turns around, there's hundreds of people in front of him, and he says, all right, if you're going to keep following me, then I just need you to know something first. If you're going to keep coming after me and pursuing me and trying to live like I live, then you need to know some things about me and about yourself and the connection we're going to have before this is going to go any further. And it's almost like Jesus says, so everybody stop. And before you even take another step, I need you to agree to some things. And if you can agree to them, then you take a step towards me. And if you can't, then you take a step away from me. So that's the image I have in my mind. Can we look at it, exactly what Jesus says now? It's in Luke 14, verse number 25. It says, and there went great multitudes with him, and he turned and said unto them. Now let's just stop there for a moment before we actually look at his words, because I want you to see there are some similarities between where Jesus is at right here and where you and I are at in our time. The Bible says there's a great multitude of people that are following him. He's literally walking from Galilee to Jerusalem, and there are a lot of people who are following after him. The thing is, they're following him for a lot of different reasons. Not everybody's following him for the same reason. So if you were to go through the crowd of those who are following him and say, why are you following Jesus? There's going to be a lot of different explanations as to why. Some are going to say, well, because I believe he is going to establish a kingdom right here on this earth. I believe he's going to overthrow Roman rule, establish a kingdom, and when he establishes his kingdom, I like to live in the advantages of his kingdom. So I'm going to follow him until his kingdom is established. But maybe if you go to a few person down the crowd, somebody else says, well, I'm following Jesus just because there's a crowd. And I'm lonely. And I have nothing to do. I'm an outcast. So when I see a crowd and I can join up with a crowd, then it at least makes me feel like I belong to something, makes me feel like I'm a part of something big. So yeah, I'm just following him because I like being a part of the crowd. Maybe if you were to go to a few person down the crowd, someone else would say, well, I'm following Jesus because I saw him heal someone. I'm following Jesus because he has loved people more deeply than anyone I've ever seen anyone love someone else. I'm following him because I heard, now this one I didn't see, but I heard that he spoke to the wind and all of nature immediately obeyed his voice. So if he has that power to heal and to command nature, that's why I'm here, because if I ever have a need, who else do I want to be around than the one who controls all of nature? So that's why I'm following him. See, there's some more reasons than that. But you're starting to get the image that people were following him for a lot of different reasons. Now, you and I know enough Bible. If you're familiar and have been at church and you've grown up in church or you've been in this church, we know enough that whenever you follow Christ, it demands something of you. There is a cost. We know that. But these people here, they're just following him for so many different reasons. They don't yet understand that. And here's the connection between this day and our day. That if you were to look at both Pew Research or even the Gallup poll, they'll tell us that nearly 75% of Americans would say that they are some type of Christian, or that they would connect with some form of Christianity. Think about it. That means that 75% of the citizens of these United States would be following behind Jesus in this text. 75% of our country places themselves as the great multitude in this text. That's literally millions of people. But just like Jesus' day, if you were to go to these 75% of Americans and say, why do you follow Jesus? There would be more reasons than you can possibly put. Just like Jesus' day. Some people today just want to follow Jesus or say they're a Christian because I just want to know I'm going to heaven for all eternity. So I'll just follow him. Some people follow Jesus because, well, when you get into a church, it just gives you a place to belong. So I'll just go to that church. Some people today follow Jesus because, well, it frankly just makes them feel safe. It makes them feel safe to have this religious connection. It makes them feel safe to be around people who are caring. And it's kind of like an insurance card you carry in your pocket. It's always nice if something goes wrong to know that you've been in church consistently. So, hey, since you've been in church, certainly God's going to be there for you, right? So a lot of reasons why people follow Jesus today. So here's where you and I are now at before we read his words. Why do you follow Jesus? And the personal question that I fought through and struggled with is, why do I follow Jesus? Sometimes I wonder if that's better determined by why you invite other people to follow Jesus. It reveals the big deal to you. I was surprised because it was January and we had this big event at our church. It was kind of an anxiety community event to help people in our community overcome anxiety. And we had, it was over 200 people from the community come to this event. And it was all based on helping people overcome their anxiety, but the best way is Jesus Christ, right? So we developed a lot of contacts and got to know a lot of people in our community. There was a particular lady that asked if she could meet with me later on the few days later. So my wife and I met with her in my office, and I began talking to her, and she was broken. I mean, she was just broken by the world. She was broken by sin. She was broken by her emotional condition. She was just so completely broken. So going with what she told me, you explain. Brokenness is a result of sin. We're all broken. And when you're broken, you realize how terrible sin truly is to you. But the only way that a person can be truly healed and put back together is to be reunited with their Creator through the forgiveness that Jesus Christ offers. That's the only way. So I went through this gospel presentation, and after I went through this whole gospel presentation, I asked the lady if she'd like to, you know, to receive Christ, and she prayed that day and received Christ as her Savior. It was later on that night that I was at home, kind of replaying the whole situation in my mind, and it hit me. I never actually told her that she's going to heaven now. Never. Like, heaven literally never got brought up. It was, she was broken. And in her brokenness, she needed something that was deeper than anything she's ever gone to. And it was a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. And she knew she needed Christ above all. Kind of like the woman at the well. Or how about the woman that was caught in the act of adultery? Broken people. But you know what I realized is probably almost all of my life, when I've talked to people about going about forgiveness of sins found in Christ, one of the biggest things I do is I tell them, do you want to know you're going to heaven? Don't get me wrong, I'm not against that. But I'm always trying to promise them, I've been trying to promise them something for them instead of helping them to realize who they really are and what they truly needed. And that was the first time, I think, it was this year, January, that God began to help me to see through the way I presented the gospel that there was a change that was beginning to take place within me. So what about you? Let's go through Jesus' words. They're simple. They're quick. Look, could you look at verse number 26 with me? This is what Jesus says. If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Here Jesus is using very strong words. He's using the word hate, which you and I know is a very strong and powerful word. But he's using this very strong and powerful word against or felt towards some of the people that are closest to you. Not to say that this is how you are to feel towards them, but to communicate to us the significance and the intensity and the passion of the love that we are to have for him. Jesus knows that we love people most deeply who we see on a regular basis. People who we connect with consistently. Those are the ones we truly love. It's the ones that you see. It's the ones you talk to. It's the ones who are in front of you. It's the ones that you can connect with on a one-on-one basis. They're the ones that we always feel the most love towards. But the problem is, none of us has ever seen Jesus Christ. So what happens is we begin to feel such a measure of love towards the people whom we see and we know and we spend time with consistently. So Jesus is using that and pulling that and saying, listen, notice the love you have for people who are so close to you. And you must realize, Jesus is saying, that the love you have for me must be so great that the great emotion that you have for them seems like anything but love. He's trying to get you and I to see that if you really want to follow Jesus Christ, that your heart, the heart of a Christ follower, it must be fascinated with love for Christ. It must be captivated by a love for Christ. It must be enchanted by a love for Christ. It must be consumed with a love for Jesus Christ. There is nothing that a follower of Jesus Christ can love more than Jesus Christ himself. And I mean absolutely nothing. Not your father, not your mother, not your wife, not your husband, not your children, not your grandchildren, not your great-grandchildren, not your siblings, and not your best friend. There is no one who should captivate your heart more than Jesus Christ does. The reason why Jesus is so specific and to the point is because he knows that the human heart does not possess the capacity to love, to truly love Jesus Christ and someone or something else at the same time. It's just not there. It's impossible to develop or possess a love for anything other than Jesus Christ. Steals away from our hearts the love that we have for Christ and then begins to direct us away from Christ and towards that object, item, or person. It creates a greater love for something and a lesser love for Jesus Christ. And the truth is, a lesser love for Jesus Christ is simply not acceptable. To follow in the words of Jesus Christ, a lesser love for him means you cannot follow that. You cannot be his disciple. He makes it so clear. So this is why, if you want to truly follow Jesus Christ, if you're going to take a step towards Jesus Christ, he wants you to identify and understand and commit that you will love him more than anyone else that you have ever seen or known or spend time with. It's like an oath that you have to take. It's like Jesus saying to this great multitude of people, it's like Jesus saying to them, if you're going to take another step, raise your right hand and repeat after me this oath. I affirm that I will love Jesus Christ more than anything else in this world. And if you're going to be willing to follow Christ, you have to affirm this truth. Because if there is anything you love in this world, or anyone you love more or equal to Jesus Christ, then it is taking the capacity of love in your heart and stealing away what truly and rightfully belongs to Christ alone and to Christ himself. If you want to know how much you love or don't love, all you have to do is just observe your actions. Just listen to your own thoughts. Just notice what makes you happy. Notice what you enjoy doing, and notice what's a burden. Notice what drives you. All of those things will show you exactly where your love is. So then Jesus says something else equally powerful in verse 27. In verse 27, he says, "And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." Whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Jesus is saying that using essentially an illustration of bearing a cross, which is a terrible visual negative illustration. I mean, it's not a thing of beauty. You get the idea of Jesus carrying the cross to Golgotha and Jesus falling under the weight of the cross because it's not easy to carry a cross. But Jesus is saying that if you're not going to bear your cross and come after him, then you cannot be his disciple. This means that you have to be willing to accept everything Christ says and submit to it and execute it exactly like he is telling you to. That's the bearing of the cross of Jesus Christ. The follower of Christ has to be submitted to this. The follower of Christ has to be submitted to being willing to face all difficulties, all afflictions, all persecutions, and yes, even death for the cause of Jesus Christ. The follower of Christ must. The follower of Jesus Christ doesn't do these things begrudgingly. He doesn't do these things thinking this is a greater burden than I can bear. But the follower of Christ willingly embraces this calling of Christ upon his life of execution and obedience and submission to Christ. He willingly bears that despite any and all obstacles that may come to him. The follower of Christ gladly accepts that. And that's why when Jesus talked to those who were following him, he told them that all who live godly will, they shall, there is a definite, they will suffer persecution. I know Christianity in America likes to promise a good life, but that's not what Jesus promised. Jesus promised that he would be with you, that he would give you joy, that he would carry you through, that he would give you fruit. But he promised that there would be trials and there would be afflictions and there will be difficulties. Jesus says these things because he knows that every follower of Jesus Christ is going to suffer persecution of some kind. It's different in every nation, but every follower of Christ will suffer persecution if you are bearing your cross in submitting to everything he says and executing it exactly as he has said it. You will suffer persecution. You're going to lose friends. Just know, you're not going to be close to some people. You may have been close to them, and you may be close to them now, but if you're going to determine this, you're going to lose friends. Just be aware that you are probably or possibly going to even lose promotions at work. It might happen. You might get passed over a promotion because of your execution of the commands of Christ. Truthfully, you might even lose the safety of your own life. You may go through times when your life feels at risk. You may go through times where what you're doing feels very dangerous. But don't you ever forget, Christianity is not about safe. Christianity is about faith. So you must know that there will be times when you are going to have to step out of safety. You're going to have to not be comfortable. You're going to lose comfort. You're going to bear your cross. You're going to lose comfort. And I know we spend our lives trying to live in comfort and then saving up money so that we can live in comfort till the day we die. I know that. But you're going to lose some comfort. You are going to lose yourself. And that's my testimony. You lose yourself for the gaining of the purpose of Jesus Christ in your life. Anything less than submitting to and accepting the carrying of your cross for Jesus Christ, and whatever it costs, no matter how severe it is, anything less than accepting it disqualifies you from being a follower of Jesus Christ. That's why Jesus says, you cannot be my disciple. You cannot. So imagine him looking at this crowd. People who had saved up for an entire life to live in luxury. And now Jesus is telling them that you have to set it aside and bury your cross. But Jesus says, if you're not willing to, then don't take another step towards me. Because to truly follow me, you're going to have to carry your cross and submit humbly to everything I say and execute it, no matter the cost. And then if you'll drop down, we're going to skip a couple of verses just for a moment. Drop down to verse number 33, if you would. In verse number 33, Jesus says, so likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. He sums it up by saying that if you want to follow Jesus Christ willingly, you're going to have to forsake everything you have, everything, for the glory of Christ. So think of this. What if Christ walks up to you right now and says, okay, I don't know what you got going on in your car or your house or your job or your connections and your relationships. I don't know what vacations you got coming up. I don't know what your hobbies are, but I want you to walk away from it and follow me. walk away right now. That's what he's telling these people. Do you see the severity and the seriousness of what he's saying? All of your earthly interests, all of your possessions, all of your affections, everything that you presently have in this life, set it aside and you follow me for the glory of Jesus Christ. So essentially, the follower of Jesus Christ willingly consents to the giving up of everything and renouncing anything and everything in his life that does not specifically relate to the glory of God in his life. He specifically renounces it. So if there's anything in these people's lives that does not contribute to the glory of Christ, then they must renounce it and walk away from it. That's challenging. Challenging for people to renounce their desires, to renounce their interests, to renounce their affections, to renounce the purpose of their life up to that moment. That's hard to do. But Jesus is calling them to this. And I know that when you think of renouncing, forsaking everything you have, it seems like you're going to lose everything. But that's what American Christianity has infiltrated your mind, and that's the lie it's pumped into your heart. Because it's not true. To renounce and forsake everything you have does not require you to lose everything. That's the thing. What it's doing is it is allowing you to be emptied, to allowing your life to be emptied of lesser purposes so that it is able to make room and to accept and be filled with the eternal purpose of God and Jesus Christ in your life. It doesn't actually cost something heavy because what you're giving up is something lesser than what you are gaining. The purpose that you are laying down is far less than the purpose that you are receiving and accepting. Jesus says anything less than full and complete consent to forsake everything in your life not connected to the glory of Jesus Christ is unacceptable. And Jesus says, if you're not willing to do so, then you cannot be my disciple. It's like Jesus essentially saying, please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I renounce everything in my life that does not contribute to the glory of Jesus Christ. I know that these oaths, so to speak, are huge. That's the last one. The second one, I didn't mention it, is I affirm that I am willing to do anything and endure everything in submission to Jesus Christ. The first one was I affirm that I will love Jesus Christ more than anything in this world. Major, major. If you really think about it, there are probably very few people who say they're Christians who are really following Christ. Truthfully, I served as a pastor for many years as a Christian, but not a follower of Christ like this. Jesus wants this of you. He wants you to know coming in what his expectations are. The verses I didn't read, they give you a couple of illustrations. I'm not going to take the time to read them because I want to be done. But in those verses, he gives you two illustrations. One is counting the cost before you build. Before you build something, Jesus says, don't you count the cost to be sure you're going to have enough money to complete it? Because Jesus says, if you just end up laying the foundation and you never able to build anything over, you're going to be an embarrassment to everyone. So you need to count the cost to know that you're willing to take it all the way to the end. And then the next illustration Jesus used was consulting or considering the cost, essentially, before you go into battle. He says a king, before he goes into battle, he kind of consults with his generals. Hey, what's the military we're going up against? How many do they have? How many do we have? What's their ammunition? What is ours? What weapons do they have? What's our ground? What's our territory? What's our strategy? Because he doesn't want to send them in unprepared. He needs to know what he's getting into before they get into it. Why does Jesus use these two illustrations in this text? It's because he wants you to know that his desire for your life is to follow Christ above everything else. Follow him with all your heart, with everything you have. Follow him. I know that to some minds, that sounds like you're already doing it. And to some minds, that sounds so vague that you don't even know what that means. And that's the problem. That's a part of the problem. We're used to a pastor standing up and telling us what everything means. When following Christ is a connection, not to Christ, but when he left, he said he would send the Comforter and that Jesus himself would not be able to tell us everything, but the Spirit would come and the Spirit would continue to tell us everything we need to know. We're not as connected to that anymore. Why? Because we're not following Christ. So here is my closing invitation. I'm asking you this question. I don't know what your life has been like before this moment and what's going on, what your spiritual condition is, what your faith is. I don't know. But I'm asking you for where you're at right now. In your heart, do you feel the tugging of the Spirit of God calling you to surrender and commit your life, to make the purpose of your life to be a follower of Jesus Christ? Essentially, I'm asking you if you would be willing to take the three oaths that Jesus said are necessary to follow him. Are you willing to say, I affirm that I will love Jesus Christ more than anything in this world? Are you willing to say that? Well, I'm going through these, if the piano player could come up. Are you willing to say the second one? I affirm that I am willing to do anything and endure everything in submission to Jesus Christ. And the third one is, are you willing to say, I renounce everything in life that does not contribute to the glory of Jesus Christ? I renounce it and I walk away from it. Essentially, you're like that crowd that day. Don't take a step forward unless you're serious about following Christ. You may not understand what everything means, but today, are you willing to say, I want with all my heart and passion to be a follower of Jesus Christ? And if you are, you come up, you acknowledge that to him, and you let him start you on the journey of what that's going to mean. But if you don't take these three oaths, you won't finish the journey, because you're going to have to work through some things that are going to be significant. These three oaths are necessary. So how about it? Would you be willing to stand up, bow your heads, close your eyes? And if today you feel the calling in your heart to say, I want to make the purpose of my life following Jesus Christ, and I want to acknowledge that to Christ right now. I'm not asking you to change this or change that. I'm asking, would you be willing to take the oaths and follow Jesus Christ? Make it the passion of your life. Would you come up right now? Would you kneel down here at the front? And would you simply acknowledge by doing so that God has put it on your heart that this is what you need? You want this to be the reason why you exist. Would you do it? Go ahead. Right now, if you feel it on your heart. See, I'm not forcing you, and your neighbor can't force you. This is something between you and Christ himself. So I don't know what your life has been or if you've ever done this before, but I'm telling you, now is an opportunity. Would you be willing to acknowledge that you will become and commit yourself to following Christ? Not being a Christian, not being a church member. I'm saying being a follower of Christ, and that is deep in what its effect in your life is. So I'm going to give you an opportunity. If you know that Christ is putting this yearning deep within your heart right now, and you are willing to step out and make that commitment, you come. You come. Only 12 did on this day that we studied. Only 12, because most won't. But I'm asking, does Christ put it on your heart for you? It's for you.